WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Ben Stiller and Janine Garofalo are longtime friends who worked together on Stiller's sketch comedy TV show. He directed her in the films Reality Bites and The Cable Guy. He since starred in last summer's big hit There's Something About Mary, as well as Your Friends and Neighbors, Permanent Midnight, and The Zero Effect. Garofalo was a regular on The Larry Sanders Show and starred in The Truth About Cats and Dogs and Clay Pigeons. Now Stiller and Garofalo have co-authored a new self-help parody called Feel This Book, an essential guide to self-empowerment, spiritual supremacy, and sexual satisfaction. The book is written in a he-said-she-said style, with Stiller and Garofalo alternating chapters. I asked them to read excerpts from their chapters about their relationship.
Janine was not what I expected right from the start. I guess I didn't expect her to be drunk. That might sound callous and cruel, but it would be unfair to the reader to paint this relationship in anything other than its true, ugly colors. I know this does not necessarily fit with the humorous vein of the book, but you asked for it. I was at TJ O'Pootertoots, a popular eatery in Beverly Hills, for nearly an hour before Janine ambled through the revolving door, about twice before she figured out how to emerge from it. By this time, I had downed my share of gin and tonics, but I was still sober enough to smell the whiskey on her breath. She seemed very eager to find a booth where we could be alone together, and by the pizzatizers, she was feeling, well, how should I put it? Let's just say, frisky. By dessert, we were both more than a bit tipsy. We were downright sloshed. On the way to the parking lot, Janine told me she loved me, and then belched. We made out for a long time in my car, which we somehow navigated back to her house. Once there, we made messy love and passed out with our backs to each other. After that, we were inseparable.
Janine, why don't you read your she said part of the story?
Okay, here we go. We met for cocktails and smart talk at Ben's favorite eatery, TJ O'Pootertoots. Ben is fond of family-oriented restaurants like O'Pootertoots, where pizzatizers are on the house and the birch beer flows in bottomless frosty mugs. He also enjoys singing along with the mechanical bears and the guilty thrill of tossing his peanut shells on the floor. Incidentally, this was a habit resented by many of our friends who felt it signified a lack of respect for the linoleum tile in their homes. "Get a load of me! Ain't I something?" Ben would shout when the waitstaff presented him with a birthday cake. He pulled the birthday stunt everywhere we went. At first, I was touched by his boyish love of cake, but then I realized that it was a thinly disguised cry for help. Ben had trouble expressing his needs, and conning innocent theme restaurant employees into serving him cake was indicative of a much deeper problem. Mustachioed waiters singing happy birthday was as close as he came to meaningful interaction with other adults. If he wasn't the focus of attention, Ben just couldn't cope.
This is Janine Garofalo and Ben Stiller reading from their new book, Feel This Book. So you two really were an item briefly?
Yes, for about a minute and a half, almost a decade ago. We were an item.
We went out for a really short period of time, but it never really panned out. But we had a much better creative connection.
What phases of your careers were you in when you met?
The fetal.
I
was actually
successful.
About 6 years into my stand-up career. I started doing stand-up in 85. I met Ben in 91. So I was about 5 years into doing stand-up.
Yeah, I was, I'd never did stand-up to this day. I've never done stand-up. But I was doing, I remember I was out in California developing a show for the Fox Network, a comedy show, which took about 2 years to finally end up being what it was. And Janine was a part of it when we finally got it on the air. But at the time, I remember I was starring in a wonderful TV movie, comedy for Fox, which I considered to be one of my big breaks. It was direct. I'm not going to say who was in it or who directed it, but it was.
I know what it was with the.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Anyway, it was
can we find out what it was?
Worst, probably one of the worst TV movies ever.
But you and George Carlin were very good in it.
It's
all right.
They were.
George Carlin's brilliant.
He is brilliant.
I remember the experience was that we were shooting late at night one night, and we did a scene, and there was silence at the end of the scene. Nobody yelled cut, and we all looked over to where the director was, and he was asleep in his chair, which was a bad sign.
When you were, particularly when you were first starting off as actors, before you had a lot of credits under your belt and a lot of experience, and before people realized how talented you both were. How much did your looks affect the way you were cast and the way you were perceived?
Well, I mean, I think of any actor who gets in front of the camera, you know, how you look totally affects how you're cast and how people perceive you. From one end of the spectrum being that, you know, like good-looking, modelly type people can work in shows that like good-looking, modelly type people, even though they might not be great actors, to the other end of the spectrum where character-y, quote-unquote, looking people can do commercials and be the guy, you know, the regular guy thing. I mean, I think people just kind of, that's the first impression that people get of you, and it will always, to a certain extent, dictate what jobs you get. I think men are afforded much, much, much more leeway in how they can look for the roles that they can play.
Right. Men, like, especially in the sitcom world, which is very lazy about casting for the most part, they will allow men to look very character-y and be the lead, whereas the women kind of really have to fit in to more of a mold, except for maybe they'll have one wild card woman on the staff, you know, who that'll be who her character is, like on Drew Carey, like the Kathy Kinney character. They use her as the brunt of jokes for, you know, certain reasons, and they don't tend to do that with guys as much. So it's just what I call lazy casting in film and television. Independent film's a little more tolerant. Theater is much, much more tolerant, and European film market's more tolerant than we are here domestically.
Janine, you have a funny part in the new book, Feel This Book, about looks. And I'm going to ask you to read that for us.
I just want to say always that I think people don't always hear what I'm saying, like when I talk about lookism or aesthetics or stuff like that. I think they think I'm coming from a much more bitter place than I'm coming from, or they, again, see it as an angry woman lashing out, and so it kind of kills some of the message. You know what I mean?
Right. It makes it seem like spoiled grapes or something.
It seems like sour grapes, yeah, which is not what I want to come from, and when it does sound like that, I'm joking. So I just don't want people to misunderstand that. Like, obviously, coming from this book is quite tongue-in-cheek, you know?
Absolutely.
So. Okay, The Ugly Truth by Jane Ann Garofalo. Libra. From the man on the street to the cop on the beat, we can all agree that it is better to be attractive. Your mother lied. Looks are everything, and the sooner you submit and stop denying the inevitable, the happier you will be. Do not misunderstand me. I dislike attractive people, as they are usually silly and weak. But it is in your best interest to try and curry their favor. You reap the benefits if there is a gorgeous guy-girl in your immediate social set. Broken-down vehicles and meager funds at a bar are easily rectified if your easy-on-the-eyes mate seeks the kindness of strangers. It is not wrong to hitch your wagon to someone else's face. Surely they won't notice your parasitic behavior, since 8 out of 10 homecoming kings-queens are utterly dull-witted. In fact, just staring into the eyes of a model or actress can cause one to sleep uncontrollably. Year after year, brick by brick, a character built on the foundation of shopping in the Sears Husky section and remote corners of the Junior Miss-Mister shops gives you the right to look back in anger and forward in condescension. It is a feeling akin to the sphincter-tightening sensation provoked by the statement, Cindy Crawford is considered a larger, voluptuous model. Journalists know not what they do.
It strikes me, Janine, that in your own career, like, some people are very kind of defiant about Hollywood looksism and everything until they get into Hollywood, and then it's like, give me the glamour. And you haven't become like a glamour person, as far as I can tell, even though you're becoming really quite successful in Hollywood.
To me, it seems like it would feel and look fraudulent if I went that route to have my reinvention, as they say, or whatever people do to slim down and get a stylist and things of that nature. It would probably read as fraudulent to anyone witnessing it as it would feel to me to do it. Plus, there's so many other actors and actresses doing it that I'll let them do it. And at least you can never say this phrase about me. Boy, she really let herself go. You can never say that. Any birthday I'm going to have, you can never say, wow, remember when she was, you know. So I'm doing it that way. Although one never knows what the career trajectory would be if you did those things.
Right.
You know, you never know.
Do you ever show up at a place where all the women are expected to be wearing sultry evening gowns and you're wearing, like, jeans and a sweater, or just like pants and a sweater?
Yeah, I don't ever get dressed up either. Not that I go to places like to be deliberately defiant or punk rock or anything. I'm not about that either. I'm just saying that I don't feel comfortable doing that, and I don't understand why other people feel that I'm being rude when I do something like that. But I just seems like it has a real let them eat cake quality when you get all dressed up at functions. I don't know. I can't even explain why I feel that way, but it just feels elitist almost in a certain way.
Perhaps because of the thousands and thousands of dollars that one dress can cost?
Yeah, something seems kind of wrong about that, and it troubles me a little bit. And then saying, like, what are you wearing? Versace. You know what I mean? Like broadcasting who you're wearing and...
I guess I'm more of a traditionalist. If I see black tie on an invitation, I wear black tie.
Golly, I'm old-fashioned.
My guests are Janine Garofalo and Ben Stiller. They've collaborated on a new self-help parody called Feel This Book. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Ben Stiller and Janine Garofalo. They collaborated on a new self-help parody called Feel This Book. I want to ask you each about a movie that you made in the past year. And Ben, I'll start with you in asking about something about Mary, which was a huge hit, as you know.
Yes.
How did you get the role in that? I had read you had a fight for the role. Was that true?
Oh, really? Oh, well, not physically. No, I didn't get into
it. You got into a bare-knuckle boxing brawl.
I think every, you know, sometimes roles come easier than other roles. I don't know if the studio off the bat was excited about me being in the movie. And then they kind of, they saw some of the, you know, footage and then they were like, okay with it. Honestly, there wasn't kind of like a big, you know, kind of me campaigning for the role or anything like that.
I'm one of the many people who thought that something about Mary was very funny, and I have a feeling if I had just seen the script, I wouldn't have thought it was funny. That just reading the jokes, I might have thought, well, this is really adolescent. But seeing it on the screen, it was one really good laugh after another. Ben, when you read the script, did you realize how funny the actual movie could be?
I think I did. I just knew what the Farrellys did, and I knew. I guess I know enough about the process of making a comedy that, you know, what's on the page and the final product, there's so much that goes on in between that I knew it could be something that was really different. Reading the, you know, a couple of the scenes, like the scene, you know, like the quote-unquote hair gel scene that everybody loves to talk about,
mm-hmm.
You know, when I read that, I thought it really made me laugh, and I thought if somebody's going to do this in a movie and I have an opportunity to be a part of that, I would like to go out there and try to, you know, go out on a limb with that. And it was something I hadn't seen before, so I thought it would be a good gamble. I thought either it would work really well or it would just be a ridiculous movie that people would, you know, it would just be like a huge disaster.
Is there a line people quote back at you from the film when they see you?
Yes. There's a, you know, people like to yell out Frank and Beans for some reason. I don't know why. And of course the ever present you've got something on your ear.
Which right.
People seem to think is the first time I've ever heard that.
I'm sure. what impact did it have on you to be in such a big hit?
It's basically just makes you very, very identifiable with the film, and people, you know, recognize me a lot more. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. They just kind of, you know, they love the movie, and so I get a lot of, that was the funniest movie ever. I love that movie. I love the scene. You got your thing caught in your zit. You know, there's just a lot of positive feedback that is kind of, I don't want to say it's constant, but it's a lot of the time. And it's all related to the fact, I think, that they enjoyed the movie so much.
No,
I can attest to the fact it's almost constant for Ben. He cannot walk down the street without, like, boys from the age of 6 to 23 have to shout at him every 5 feet that he's walking.
But the thing is, I think people feel very, like, you know, the character's a very approachable character because...
Right.
The character in the movie is a nice guy. So I think that kind of runs over. So people just feel like, It's okay, and that's totally fine. And you know, it's nice. It's a nice thing. It's sometimes it's you don't want to deal with it, but for the most part, it's a very positive thing.
My guests are Ben Stiller and Janine Garofalo, and they've co-authored a parody of a self-help book called "Feel This Book: An Essential Guide to Self-Empowerment, Spiritual Supremacy, and Sexual Satisfaction." Janine Garofalo, I want to ask you about your role in Clay Pigeons, which I thought was a very funny, ironic turn on the film noir. And you play a cop in it.
I was an FBI agent.
Yeah.
And in that.
It was a very good role for you. Tell me a little bit about how you got the role and what you liked about it.
Well, I had read the script originally and actually was not pleased with some of what I perceived to be kind of rather misogynistic qualities to the script. And the part originally, I think, was written for a man, the FBI agent, and they were thinking of going male or female, and I was like, well, there has to be a female in this that's doing something other than wearing next to nothing and getting killed. So it is incumbent upon me I have a responsibility to be in this now and trying to lend some kind of voice of reason to some of the goings-on in here. Plus, I wanted very much to work with Vince Vaughn and Joaquin Phoenix. So that's how I got involved with that project.
You must have done some rewriting of the part, because it's been a while since I saw the film, but there's one scene in which, as I recall, Vince Vaughn character is trying to, who's the bad guy, is trying to pick mm-hmm. you up in a diner or something. And you just have these great comeback put-down lines for him.
Vince is an incredibly funny guy and a great actor. And they basically just let the camera roll and we pretty much just had a conversation, and that's what was very much edited down and put into the film. But anytime that we're laughing and stuff like that, it's real, and the things that we said to each other were stuff that we basically just kind of made up to say, although one line was written where, I can't remember, something about the first guy not wearing denim or something was written, and then basically every other thing was just a conversation we had that they filmed.
Do you have a favorite part from that?
I actually don't really remember. I think something like when he was reading my palm or something, just the sheer corniness of it.
Did you see the movie, Janine?
I didn't see it.
This brings to light a very interesting fact that Janine doesn't like to see her own movies.
I did see parts of Clay Pigeons. And I know I saw that scene because I very much enjoy watching Vince work. But for the most part, I try not to see my films, at all possible.
Tell us more about that scene and the part you're going to say when he's reading the palm of your hand, and then we'll find out why you don't see your movies.
You know, as I recall, I just think when he did it, it just took me by surprise, and it was so corny that it made me laugh really, really hard when people try that kind of thing with you. Like, it's just an excuse to touch your hand, and then they get kind of fake spiritual with you. Those types of things, I think that just made me laugh really hard, and that part of shooting I enjoyed with Vince very much.
Well, I think the thing to do here is to play a clip of that scene from Clay Pigeons.
Are you into the stars at all?
No.
Astrology?
No.
What about those stones things? You pull them stones
the
out?
The rune stones?
Yeah.
No.
Can I see your hand for a second, please?
Why?
Well, I don't mean to give you cause for alarm or anything, but I think your aura is a little bit cluttered. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, man. Let's see here. Well, it's just as I expected. It says here that you like country western music. Small town. What do I know? That you like a whole lot of things you never gave yourself a chance to like.
Oh.
Could you try my hat on for me, please?
Do you think it'll help?
I don't know, but it'll be a lot of fun at the bar.
That's Janine Garofalo and Vince Vaughn in Clay Pigeons. Now, Janine Garofalo, now you have to explain to us why you don't see your own movies.
Well, I've seen parts of some. First of all, I try not to see them before any press tours or press junkets or promotions for things, because if I don't like it, I don't want to lie to people.
That's a very interesting reason.
Yeah, I don't feel like I want to compromise my integrity in that way and then expect people to believe me on another press tour for another book or movie or TV show. I don't feel it's fair to ask for $8.50 from someone if I don't even believe in it.
But let me stop you there, because that implies that you're concerned whenever you're making a movie that there's a chance you're not going to like it.
Yes, so I don't see it before the press tour.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say that during the press tour. I'll say I haven't seen it yet. You know, I know, and I'll be very honest. I'll say, you know, when I was shooting this, I like this very much. I think it's going to be very good. Or I'll say, I have no idea how this is going to turn out. Or I'll say, the script was fantastic. It's anybody's guess what would happen. But
mm-hmm.
But also, it's not pleasant to see yourself blown up on a screen, 20 feet tall and sitting there, you know, every imperfection, every insecurity that you have. And then you have to hear your voice. And maybe, you know, if you didn't like your performance, it's very painful to watch yourself in a film.
I think Robert Klein said in his act once, like, when you look at yourself on the screen, it's like a nose hair becomes a pine tree.
Yeah, yes. And your pores are big moon craters. And that's true. And, you know, all of those kinds of things cause one great pain. And so there's that. But also, no, the main thing is I don't like to do press and not be as I would prefer to be diplomatic mm-hmm. about things that I'm promoting. I do think this book is funny. I've read the book. You know, I wrote part of it. And Ben wrote the other part of it, and I do like this book. So I can honestly tell you I've read it and I enjoy it. But some movies that I've done, I can't honestly say, that's a great film. Give me $850, you know? That's mm-hmm. a lot of money.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for talking with us. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Yeah, good talking to you.
Janine Garofalo and Ben Stiller co-wrote the new self-help parody, Feel This Book. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.